Sask Ag Today with Doug Faulkner.
Good afternoon and welcome to Sask Ag Today. Coming up on today's program, the Canadian Canola Growers Association announced the opening of the early application window for 2024 cash advances 2 weeks ago, but not everyone is happy about its contents. That was the first topic of discussion on Friday's SaskAgToday.com roundtable with Chief Agricultural Editor Kevin Hirsch. We will hear from him coming up on today's program. As well, maintaining public trust in an increasingly skeptical world. It's not an easy task, but a communication specialist says it can be done with time, attention, and effort. We'll hear from Lauren Sergi. She spoke a couple of weeks ago at the Farm and Food Care Saskatchewan Annual Convention in Saskatoon. As you heard, it was announced on Friday that up to $60 million in funding, evenly split between the federal and Manitoba governments, will be invested in the Arctic Gateway Group. The money will be used to finish work on the Hudson Bay Railway and to start to redevelop the Port of Churchill. We'll hear some of the speeches, at least segments of those speeches, coming up on today's edition. All those stories and much more on today's program. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Milligan Bio. Milligan Bio now offers BioMeal for your livestock, giving your animals more protein, more energy, and more of what they need. It's also brought to you by Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist. Welcome back to Sask Ag Today. The Canadian Canola Growers Association announced the opening of the early application window for 2024 cash advances 2 weeks ago now, but not everyone is happy about its contents. That was the first topic of discussion on Friday's SaskAgToday.com roundtable with Chief Agricultural Editor Kevin Hirsch.
We mentioned in last week's roundtable that cash advances are now available through the Canola Growers Association, one of the organizations that administer the fund. But what I should have cued to was the fact that back in 2022, the government raised it to $250,000 interest-free, and then last year increased it to $350,000 interest-free. Well, there's been a no announcement about the amount being increased, so it drops back to its original $100,000 interest-free, which when you look at it, what's really changed? Expenses are still pretty high. Interest rates are supposed to come down, but haven't come down yet. So the reasons for increasing it to $350,000 haven't exactly gone away. And there's going to be farm groups lobbying and saying that there's no reason to reduce this as producers look for operating cash for the year ahead. And that $350,000 saves you a lot more money interest-free than $100,000 would. So it'll be interesting to see if the government responds to those requests.
He also commented on last week's federal government announcement of funding of up to $10.6 million for the Swine Cluster 4 program for hog sector research.
Well, there's numerous clusters out there, and we see the clusters with their funding announced, whether it's the diverse field crop cluster or the wheat cluster or the pulse crop cluster, but there's also a pork cluster. They have to make applications, have their projects meet the criteria, and then there's matching federal funding. So these are not unsurprising or not too surprising that these are being announced, but always good news when good research projects get funding.
Hirsch then went into Ottawa's announcement of the opening of an agriculture and agri-food office in Manila, Philippines.
I think bolstering trade is always very valuable. I do wonder why we have Canadian trade offices and then we also have Saskatchewan trade offices, and I'm sure some of the other provinces are doing it too. I guess everybody's got slightly different rationale for where they put trade offices, but it would make more sense to me if we were all on the same page and the trade offices encompassed all of Canada. You know, our Premier Scott Moe right now is in India promoting trade, which is a very valuable trading partner especially for pulse crops and many other things. And that's all valuable, but I think it would make sense to promote things jointly and have all the provinces and the federal government together in where they put trade offices and how the efforts are carried out.
He notes Saskatchewan's Water Security Agency released its preliminary runoff report last week, and they're expecting below to well below normal runoff this spring.
There's just hardly any snow anywhere, or no snow of any significance, so it's not surprising. You know, on top of that, soil moisture conditions going into winter were low in many areas. So when you drive around and see very, very little snow at this time of the year, it tells you what the maps are telling you. Unless we get a significantly more snow, runoff potential is going to be very low in many areas.
Hirsch then reacts to the news of $60 million in federal and provincial funding for Manitoba's Port of Churchill.
When I first got into the ag news business in the early 80s, Churchill was in the news then, and why aren't we using Churchill more? And then, you know, the whole rail line and port facility was sold to Omnitrack, an American short line railway company, you know, a private company. Everybody thought, well, maybe this is going to be, you know, a good thing for Churchill. They could never get significant volumes through there. Then it was sold to a combination of AGT Foods and a financial, Fairfax Financial, I believe it was. And after a number of years, and they got some government money, but they basically walked away from it. And I think there's a First Nations owns a lot of that infrastructure now. So call me skeptical. There's reasons why you need a rail line to Churchill because of the community. But I'm really doubtful that we're going to see significant amounts of grain move there anytime soon. It's been a lot of years since anything significant has moved through Churchill, so it might not be a popular opinion, but color me skeptical.
And he says there's no guarantee that the rail line to Churchill won't get washed out again.
No, it's a difficult rail line through the permafrost there. Some people say that with climate change, Churchill is going to become more and more viable. Perhaps, but it's still a pretty short season port, and there's a lot of difficulty. It is a lot closer than some of the export facilities for a big chunk of the prairies, but it's never even in its heyday, more than, you know, 500, 600, 700,000 tons. There's inland terminals in Saskatchewan that handle that much in a year. So it's never been very significant, but it's always been a point of contention.
Kevin Hirsch is the chief agricultural editor for SaskAgToday.com. It's time now for the Ag Review portion of our program, and that's a presentation of New Era Ag Technologies in Swan River.
GX94, Ag Review.
The Prairie Grain Development Committee meetings are going on in Saskatoon this week. Breeders bring forward potential new varieties for testing and evaluation, with the hopes of them being recommended for registration. The Canadian Grain Commission is actively involved in those discussions. Derek Bunkowski is the CGC's chief grain inspector.
Both our grading system and our variety registration system in Canada are integral pieces that allow Canada to deliver the quality and the functionality that our customers are looking for. So in terms of variety registration, CFIA registers the varieties, but ultimately it's the CGC that determines which varieties are going to be designated to the certain classes.
The meetings for the various grains and oilseeds start tomorrow and continue through Thursday. A Saskatchewan livestock company has been fined after one of its workers was seriously injured by a charging bull. Holdstock Livestock pleaded guilty to breaching the province's occupational health and safety regulations and was fined more than $50,000. The worker was injured by the bull near Weyburn almost 2 years ago. CN and CPKC Rail supplied a combined 77% of hopper cars ordered in Grain Week 29, unchanged from the prior week. While overall system performance was unchanged from the prior week, this reflects modest improvement for CN and no change for CPKC as compared to the prior week. In supplying 70% of cars ordered by shippers in Week 29, CN saw performance improve slightly from the 68% order fulfillment performance seen in Week 28. CN performance remains below the 90% performance threshold for the seventh consecutive week and below the 80% performance threshold for a fifth straight week. CPKC performance is unchanged from the prior week, with the railway supplying 86% of shipper orders in week 29. CPKC performance remains below the 90% threshold for the fifth consecutive week. Overseas, farmers confronted French President Emmanuel Macron at a large farm fair in Paris on Saturday. After ending their protests 3 weeks ago, they want to see some visible progress on issues ranging from lower-cost imports to fuel subsidies. This is France 24 correspondent Antonia Kerrigan.
There were around about 400 million euros worth of measures put on the table at the very end of January, early February, at which point, on one level, the farmers' movement sort of suspended, pending seeing these measures put in place. But obviously they're back, they're extremely angry once again. We have seen, you know, lots of talk of making food security and food autonomy a real priority in French politics. The farmers want to see figures and they want to see how they're going to be helped to get there.
Macron did meet behind closed doors with representatives from five French farm unions. The Canadian Food Inspection Agency says it has revoked a poultry control zone order on Vancouver Island. It says the measure was invoked on November 11th on Qualicum Beach after detecting an outbreak of highly contagious bird flu. The agency says it ends the control zones after finishing post-outbreak surveillance where no more cases of avian flu are found. Its website says there are 15 currently infected sites in BC as of last Thursday and 144 previously infected sites that have affected more than 6 million birds. There are trending topics every day on social media. On Friday, it was Subway and yellow mustard. A Friday morning post on X, formerly known as Twitter, by Canada's food professor Dr. Sylvain Charlebois at Dalhousie University in Halifax, started the ball rolling. He said Subway has told its Canadian franchisees that yellow mustard would no longer be made available because it was a slow-moving product. People on social media don't believe that and want their yellow mustard back. Rick Mitzel is the executive director of Sask Mustard.
The individual stores probably still have access to purchase yellow mustard to other suppliers. So I'm not sure you're going to see this happen as a widespread thing. Because again, my understanding is some of the individual owners can still purchase it.
Canada is the world's largest yellow mustard seed exporter, and Saskatchewan is the largest mustard seed producing province. And SaskAg Today is always available on podcast. Listen to past shows whenever you want. Find them easily by going to gx94radio.com. Also, you can hear the podcast on your Amazon Echo. Just enable the GX94 skill and choose SaskAg Today. And yes, it is free. Please stay tuned. SaskAg Today will return in 1 minute's time. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. I'm Doug Faulkner. We have light snow and blowing snow and minus 16 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at 1 o'clock.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for April are trading at 188.32 this hour. That's up 42. June live cattle trading at 184.05, up 17. April feeder cattle trading at 259.50, down 47. May feeder cattle trading at 261.92, down 15. April lean hogs trading at 86.40, down 80. May lean hogs trading at 90.72, down 12. And that's the livestock market conditions. Well, it was announced on Friday that up to $60 million in funding, evenly split between the federal and Manitoba governments, will be invested in the Arctic Gateway Group. The money will be used to finish work on the Hudson Bay Railway and start to redevelop the Port of Churchill. Federal Prairies Can Minister Dan Vandal spoke at the ceremony, marking the occasion.
I'm pleased to announce that we are building on our investments since 2018 with an additional investment of $30 million to the Arctic Gateway Group to finish the job and complete this phase of their capital infrastructure program. This investment, which is made through Prairies Can, will support the ongoing maintenance and operations of the Hudson's Bay rail line. This means jobs will be maintained. This means mining and forestry opportunities will open up, including, of course, critical minerals, which is essential to our country's north. Manitobans through the Bayline communities will have the opportunity to position themselves as a true gateway to the Arctic and a true gateway to the world. We are proud to have partnered with local communities and recognize their leadership and their advocacy. And last but certainly not least, I want to thank Premier Canoe, Minister Moses, the ministers, and MLA Redhead for their commitment, their partnership, and their leadership to move forward with the Government of Canada and work together on this very, very important initiative. This is a true life example of closer collaboration between the federal government and the province to build communities, which is at the heart of our building a green prairie economy that I tabled in Parliament last December. We will continue to work together, create jobs and opportunity for Northern Manitoba, for Churchill, and for Northern Canada.
Manitoba Premier Wab Canoe was also on hand for the announcement.
So you heard our friends announce that they are investing an additional amount here into the Port of Churchill. And we're friends, and good friends don't let their friends go it alone. So we figured we should show up here and announce $30 million from the provincial government to invest in the Arctic Gateway Group. The Port of Churchill makes Manitoba a maritime province. And that is absolutely crucial to the future of our provincial economic success. You know, the Port of Churchill and the rail line that feeds the Bayline communities, as well as Churchill and the port, are a strategic asset. They're a strategic asset to the future development of our province because not only do they allow supplies to reach these communities and to Nunavut, but also this is going to help increase our status as a trading province. We know that Manitoba has what it takes to be a winner in the zero emission economy of the future. We already have low carbon electricity. Just last week, we approved another critical mineral mine here in Manitoba, and we are embarking on a strategy of investing in that low carbon future. And working together with the federal government, working together with Churchill's leadership and Mike Spence and council, working together with Indigenous leadership and business leadership, we are moving forward in ensuring that we are going to make good on the investments our province has made over the last 50 years in being an environmental and economic leader. Long story short, the future path to prosperity in our province is making us a winner in the low carbon economy of the future. And the Port of Churchill is how our low carbon goods are going to make it to world markets and ensure that not only do we decarbonize here in Manitoba, but we act as a showcase for the rest of the world to do their part to solve the climate crisis as well. On a related note, our team really views ourselves as the sales force for Manitoba. We want to ensure that people around the world hear the message that you can have good jobs, a growing economy, and work to solve the climate crisis. And so the investment here today, the collaboration with the federal government, the partnership with the Churchill and Bayline community governments is really about us broadcasting a message to the world that Manitoba is stepping up and Manitoba is a leader. As the premier of our province, I'm very proud to be able to say that little Manitoba, that some of the other jurisdictions sometimes like to look their noses down at us in, we are the leaders in the economy of the future. And we are making good on our commitment, not only to the people of the province, but to the land and waters that sustain us.
And Churchill Mayor Mike Spence then commented on the federal provincial funding announcement.
We heard our premier and our minister announce an important commitment to invest to strengthen Manitoba's position as a maritime province. People may ask how things are now at the port and the rail. We're going to succeed in unlocking opportunities, and we're turning the corner. We'll see this port grow, prosper. I want to quickly touch on three points critical. First and foremost, like the Premier and the Minister indicated, this port and rail line is owned by Indigenous and Northern communities, and we're fully committed to the success of this. We aren't going anywhere. This is our home. We have a long-term vision. And on behalf of our board, I'd like to recognize all our partner communities along the Bay Line, our First Nation communities and Northern communities as partners. I also critically have to thank our management team to get us to this point. It's been a lot of hard work. They're a very dedicated team, and we're looking forward to more success with our management team. Secondly, most importantly, it's all about partnerships. And we partnered with our provincial federal government. And so we're getting there. We know where to go. It's critical that we thank our partners as we move through this. We have a vision. They share the vision that we have. Need to recognize the value of investment into this national strategic asset in Canada's north. Today's investment will allow us to complete a major capital improvement on the rail line and will allow us to shift and focus on redeveloping our port. It is an exciting time. It's taken a lot of hard work, but we're turning the corner. We're there. Thirdly, the relationships and partnerships take partners to make it happen. We have 5 ambassadors from Nordic nations here with us. We welcome you. This port is an international port, and we will ship through Canada's north. We're on to big, big opportunities that lay ahead of us. As you all know, this winter we signed an agreement to ship critical minerals through northern Manitoba to international markets, and you'll see that this summer. We are expanding our freight services, which we announced previously, and that'll happen this spring. We will have further announcements this summer in terms of other products going through. Our management team are dedicated to make it happen, and we, the ownership, will make it happen.
However, it remains to be seen how many agricultural products will be shipped through the Port of Churchill in the future. It's time now for the Commodities Update. That's coming up next.
Commodities Update.
Canola futures are trading up across the board this afternoon. May canola trading at $587.90, up $9.70. July canola trading at $594.70, up $8.10. May Minneapolis wheat trading at $6.52¾, that's up 6 cents. May Kansas City wheat trading at $5.76 per bushel, up 10.5 cents. May Chicago wheat trading at $5.74½, up 5.5 cents. May corn trading at 420 and a quarter, up 6¾ of a cent. May soybeans trading at 11.44 per bushel, up 2¼ cents. May oats trading at 3.66¾, up 12¾ of a cent. And that's the commodities update. Maintaining public trust in an increasingly skeptical world. It's not an easy task, but a communication specialist says it can be done with time, attention, and effort. Lauren Sergi spoke a couple of weeks ago at the Farm and Food Care Saskatchewan Annual Convention in Saskatoon.
Trust is, as I like to say, it's the goose that lays the golden egg when it comes to communication, because when people trust you, they are first up more likely to pay attention to you. They're waiting for your information. It's good. The other thing is that it makes you more persuasive, so you don't need to make your case to bring people onto your side as quickly. When they do disagree with you, when you do present something that challenges them, they give you the benefit of the doubt. So you want this very much.
She explains who people do and don't trust.
Right now, it's hard to say who does, because the simple thing is that most people don't. Some recent global studies of this have indicated that so far, not-for-profits and businesses actually hold the biggest share of public trust, but that numbers across the board have been declining little bit by little bit, year over year. So it's a slow erosion of trust in all departments.
Sergi says the public is questioning certain marketing tactics.
It absolutely is a trend. That still holds true. And I would say now that we're more cynical than we were before, there's the automatic assumption that you are selling me a bad bill of goods, because everyone online is selling me a bad bill of goods and social media is a mess and you can't trust anyone. Da, da, da. So it's an unfortunate bit of a trust trough that we're in right now.
She tells us where farmers stand in the public trust level.
I think that as a whole perception, farmers have a lot of trust, right? I mean, the proverbial salt of the earth and all of that. And we still very much trust that kind of ethos, that kind of character that they have. But where we run into a little bit of a sticky wicket is the interaction between farmers and other agencies. Because farmers work with government agencies, farmers work with big corporations, especially like Cargill and whatnot, which for a group of the public is a scary name. It's like saying Big Pharma. Very scary. And so that can pull down the trust in the farmers a little bit, but overall, them as a distinct group have a lot of trust.
Sergi says the public trusts smaller farms more than larger farms.
Oh, the trust, I would say, is definitely focused on those small individuals. When we can put a face and a family to the farm, then we say, oh, it's a real person. It's not some big exploitive operation. And we're able to understand the scale of it. The difficulty when you get into really big farming is the scale. People can't wrap their heads around how big it is and how complex an operation it is. And when we don't understand something, we tend to trust it a little bit less. And then we think of all those other big corporations we don't like very much. So it's very much that association of the farmer with the farm. That's where the trust exists.
She outlines her main message to producers.
My main message today is that it is possible to gain public trust and to grow public trust, but that it's a long game. It's something you have to do over a long period of time. It requires that you demonstrate understanding and empathy of the people that you're speaking to, that you actively work on building up your character so that you appear trustworthy, and that you work with other people, because one voice shouting in the wilderness doesn't carry very far, but lots of voices working together do.
Sergi says personal contact and social media are both monitored by the public.
It all plays a role. And that's the thing, is that we can't hide behind one style of communication that we feel comfortable with just because social media is quote unquote easy. I say that. That's a loaded word, easy. Just because, though, it's accessible doesn't mean it's the only channel. You also want to be doing the tours and speaking to the people and putting your face out there and showing up at the events. And you also want to be speaking with the media and appearing in the articles and doing the interviews. And you also want to be doing the newsletters and the grassroots outreach. All of it plays a role. And you don't want to do that stuff and say, well, I hate social media, so I'm not going to bother. No, you got to be there too.
And she talks about trying to relate to Generation Y.
The big thing is, anytime you're reaching a younger generation, is don't pander to them. They're smart. They are connected. They are engaged. And their cynicism is probably more developed than I would like it to be. Talk to them like they are real thinking individuals and that they care about the issues that you care about. Just make sure the language that you use is accessible to where they are and what they're likely to understand.
Lauren Sergi is a communication specialist who spoke at the recent Farm and Food Care Saskatchewan meeting in Saskatoon. Please stay tuned. Your Farm Bulletin Board is coming up right after these messages.
Farm Bulletin Board.
A Soils and Crops Conference is coming up March 5th and 6th in Saskatoon, so keep that in mind. That's next week already. As well, the FCC Women Entrepreneurs Summit is being held on Thursday, March 7th. They're inviting the media and entrepreneurs in agriculture, agribusiness, and agri-food to register now for that summit. The FCC Women Entrepreneurs Summit is a free online event that will allow participants to boost their leadership skills, connect, and build personal and professional growth. The keynote speakers include Tina Verugis, owner of T-Works Incorporated and diversity, equity, and inclusion expert. Also, Stephanie Holmes-Winton, the founder and CEO of Cashflow. Candace Hill, a manager of brand planning and advertising services at FCC. Sheena Russell, the CEO of Made with Local, and Gina Luckett, the owner and general manager of Luckett Vineyards. So it's coming up Thursday, March 7th. It'll run from 1 until 3 in the afternoon. The event is complimentary for all women in agriculture, agribusiness, and agri-food, but pre-registration is required. Participants can register online at www.fcc.ca/events. or by calling 1-888-332-3301. And that'll do it for SaskAg Today for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 for another edition of the program.